everyone for joining us. The Hagman & Hagman Report. HagmanReport.com, HagmanandHagman.com, two primary websites. The latter, of course, you can watch the show. And, of course, all of the venues are off HagmanandHagman.com. You can get them off HagmanandHagman.com. HagmanReport.com, go there for the latest news, information, analysis, and also, John is going to whoop me if I don't say this again. You got to look for that old-fashioned radio. That's right. We pick a new one. He picks a new one every week. I think I own one of those. Anyway, therefore, the show descriptions, guest lineup for the week. I want to thank John for all of the hard work that he has done. He's a blessing to our, just a blessing. As is Eric the Tech and everyone else, and including Stan Deo. Oh, wow, a blessing, Stan and Hollydale. They're a blessing to our show as well, Stan, every Tuesday. And kind of laying things out, whether it's politics or earth changes or whatever. Before we get to Stan, I just want to mention greenevative.com. You've got only 7 days, a week from today, to take advantage of their 14% off discount of your entire purchase. All right. So, well, actually, it's until the 15th of March, the Ides of March, but, look, I had a wrestle with Alan. I mean, we sumoed, okay? They have just this great array of saltwater battery chargers, greenevative.com. This is the neatest device I've ever seen. Every time I use it, I marvel at this. A battery recharger that uses salt and water to recharge your rechargeable batteries. But folks, take advantage of this. Order today, 14% off your entire purchase by Alan Riggs. He's been so gracious to offer this, to extend this to the 15th of March. GMAG complete. It was crafted especially for you, the listeners of the Hagman and Hagman Report, and the viewers by the good folks at Greenevative. So take advantage of this once-in-a-lifetime special, 14% off through the 15th of March. Go to greenevative.com, greenevative.com, or go to hagmanreport.com, click on the link to Greenevative, and make sure you tell them to get the discount that you heard about him on the Hagman and Hagman Report. And one of these days, I think Eric might catch me playing with this battery charger, probably, or Jackie or somebody, because it's really neat.
Coming up now, we have Mr. Stan Deo. He joins us each and every Tuesday in hour number three. Folks, go to standeo.com and bookmark the website. They have constant updates on news content, as well as their photo of the day and video of the day and much more, as well as the show images page.
Hey, by the way, after last week, I will never miss the photo and video of the day again.
Did you see the photo of the day today?
No, I missed it.
It's a picture of Obama burning the Constitution. Pretty good. Hey, Stan, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here again. We've made it through another week, guys.
Yeah, we have.
Are you sure?
Well,
Let us check.
Your week.
Oh, man. Yeah. What you thinking about? I mean, wow, what a week, news-wise and everything. It's.
I know. Man. I was looking at the news Ollie put up on the website today. Wow. You know, the world is absolutely lacking security for everyone, lacking peace for everyone. So I'm reminded of the biblical warning that when they cry peace and safety, a sudden destruction upon them. And I don't know whether that means, we've got peace and safety, and then they're surprised, or whether they cry out, we need peace and safety, and it doesn't do any good. The world, you know, blows apart. I mean, just war springs out everywhere or something.
Yeah.
Look over in England.
The analysis on that. Yeah. Go ahead, sir. I'm sorry.
Well, over in England, I mean, the House of Lords, you know, they've put the second motion to defeat Brexit there, which, of course, Brexit's already been approved, but Holly and I were talking about that earlier. It just seems like they're doing the left wing over there, the fifth columnist, the silent communist, silent one-worlders, or whatever you want to call them, are doing the same as they are over here, setting up tremendous opposition to the elected government and to the bills that have been passed, you know, in both countries legally for various issues. But how can we govern with this chaos, you know, running amok here in our countries? It's just
You know, after looking at your headlines today, and again, Holly must have been up at the, my goodness, middle of the night posting. But yep. I question that as well. How long can this be, this status quo be sustained, or this level of chaos be sustained? I submit, not long. And I was telling Eric and Joe before I, or as I came into the studio today, that I fear for the safety of Donald Trump. I really do.
Yes, I know, the poor man. Well, not only do we fear that, we pray for him at least twice a day, for him and his family, and for Vice President Pence and his family, and for the team that Trump-Pence administration put together, you know, the ones they've gotten that they wanted, and their families. We pray for the Lord's protection on them, because it doesn't take an idiot to see, or a genius anyway, sorry, to see what the left is trying to do to the administration. They are blocking it at every turn that they can, and they are putting out movies and, you know, comedies and things. Some are serious, some aren't, but that are really encouraging any left-wing nuts out there that want to take a crack at the administration, you know, or the president, you know, to figure out ways to do it. And we never did that. I didn't like Obama. I didn't like his policies, his administration, but I never got out there and, you know, picketed or said, all right, let's down with the president and that kind of stuff. Just, you know, I hope we can last through his administration and get a replacement, which did happen.
But right.
They're stirring up civil war everywhere.
I agree, and I think that's their intent. I really believe their intent is to create a shooting war here in the United States, divide us and conquer us. And I think, you know what, I think Obama, I mean, Lynch, putting out that video, I just have never seen anything like this. I don't know, Stan. If you don't mind, I'm going to, me and my dog, come on. You and I could take a hike up in the woods or something, up in the mountains of Colorado. I'm about ready for that.
Sounds like a plan, doesn't it? I was just saying to Holly today, we were out driving to get something at the store, and I said, you know, yeah, we haven't gone up in the mountains and walked around with the dogs in the peaceful days in a long time. We ought to go do that, just get out of it for a while.
Yeah, it's definitely getting crazy. The media continues to, you know, spread the hate, the message of hate, and provoking people's emotions with lies and deception, and it is getting out of hand. Definitely. I don't know where you want to start tonight, Stan. I was just looking at I saw some images or some things on your show images page. I was looking at these before you came on. Before I saw this, I was looking at the caverns, the Knights Templar caverns.
Right.
That's a pretty fascinating story.
It is, isn't it? They think that they're 700 years old. And as legends go, the Knights Templar, of course, were sent by the Vatican, to go fight the holy wars over in the Middle East, you know. And they were just, you know, average wealth type knights, not super rich or anything. But when they came back, after spending time in Jerusalem at the Temple Mount, which they occupied, they came back and suddenly they started into international banking and had lots of cash to lend to people. And so the rumor was that they'd found Solomon's treasure somewhere down in there. And then time passed and all the knights were assassinated on a single day by the king of the country they were in there. I think it was France. But anyway, they were wiped out, and you got to wonder if the treasures that they had remaining in their banking, deposits, wherever they held them, whether it was in these kind of caverns or what, were then confiscated by either the throne of that country or the throne and the Vatican. That led to, you know, current books and things saying that, well, the Templars disappeared. But did they disappear completely? Did they go into the Freemasons, or did they go into the Jesuit order? You don't know. So, those pictures in that article, quite interesting.
What I find interesting is the, and I guess you can't really tell from the pictures, but the entrances to the cave, and if these are entrances, these holes, are these holes how the cave were accessed, or...
The holes that you you see in the above ground shots, I think the majority of those are just rabbit holes that have fallen in. But the one in image 17 shows one of the entrances, which is like sideways, you know, going vertical opening rather than horizontal opening like a rabbit would make. They did cover this up in 2012, as you read in the articles. And the reason was because there were a lot of idiots practicing witchcraft that were going down in there and torturing people and doing satanic rituals inside this. And so the owners of the property had enough and they closed it all off. So did they remove, say, a big rock that you can kind of see up there that could have been part of the structure, or a piece of log that might have hidden that entrance? If you look in the upper left-hand corner, you can see what I'm talking about. It's a tree. Either a tree limb or a piece of wood that's grown little limbs on it that might have been down there to cover that entrance. It looks pretty clean inside, and apparently, you know, locals have been in it for years. So we don't see anything other than inscriptions that were left scrawled on the odd wall by the Templars. I think looking at it, there were a lot of, like, alcoves. You can see the candlelit things or whatever lighting source that is in these alcoves, and there were a lot of those. As though they had set up some of them to store certain artifacts, like maybe they had the Ark of the Covenant. I doubt it, but maybe they did. And, you know, the treasures of the temple, they may have had those as well. You know, they were made to go into the Holy of Holies place and stuff like that. But I don't know. It's a mystery that, you know, kind of disappeared in the clouds of history since then. And if we need to have the Ark of the Covenant back when the Messiah comes, I'm sure he'll lift a finger and suddenly it'll appear there, wherever he is there in Jerusalem. But yeah, great mystery here. Wow. Great mystery.
These images are, yeah. Folks, go to standale.com, and check the show images page. Always. Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. Makes me wonder what else is out there like that hasn't been discovered or is being kept hidden. What's that TV show on? I think it's on the History Channel. Oak Island.
The Curse of Oak Island.
And I've watched one episode of that, I think. But you know, there's these places around the globe that have this they're in these historical contexts that. And it seems like a lot of them, are put off limits by governments, whether it was Mount Ararat in Turkey where they think Noah's Ark was a lot of these places are shut down, you know, to the general population. Wonder, you know, if we'll ever do some of these things, but
looking at these images, if I can ask you, Stan, how are these constructed? I mean, not how. How were they constructed, these?
You know, I wondered that, too. You can see it, some of the images that you look at in the article, strata in what they carved through. But it looked like it could have been just compressed sedimentary deposits rather than hard granite stones. So they may have just gone in there and, you know, chiseled out. But where the stuff that they took out went, I don't know. But I did wonder about the same thing. How did they get in there and do that? It's not as, you know, finely polished as Egyptian stuff, you know, in the pyramids and various burial chambers. But yeah, they did spend time doing it, and it would have taken quite a while even carving out of this mud, this baked sediment here. If you look over at the overburden, it's like dirt in a field with grass and trees growing over the top of it. So I don't know what this material is, but I do think it's probably compressed dirt of some sort.
That makes sense. It would make it easier, but still, it's a marvel, to me anyway, of engineering.
And they would have had to light it probably with torches or candles. Right. And that, you know, the fumes from that would have to get out someplace. Otherwise, they'd kill themselves there if they slept there. And there were a number of things. And one of the pictures on the left side, that looked like cubicles where each night would have been his room while they were there, just at a guess. And then there was another one that had something like a sink of stone or the material they carved out of it coming out of the wall with a symbol carved above it. And I was trying to figure out, you know, what the heck that, what would have been there in that place. You know, it would have been something very, you know, holy, you know. And if you look at, I think the first of the 15 images they got on their website, these big images, you see the doorways are smooth, you know, rolled smooth arches, and the inner arches have holes dug in them at regular intervals, like pits. And you got to wonder what that symbolized. It's just a number of mysterious things about how they organized it and what they stored there, what they looked at, what they worshipped there. Or was it just a banking storehouse and until they could transfer their money, you know, into Europe to become the bankers of the world at the time?
Interesting.
Anyway, it's one of those mysteries, as you say, that maybe someday the good Lord will explain if it's necessary, but otherwise we'll never know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you can really get drawn into this. Wow.
Yeah, you can.
All right. Okay. All right. Yeah, you've got some other issues. There are other things up here about issues.
One thing, in image 15, read about the permafrost thaw intensifying. I had never, you know, really dug into it except with Steve Quayle a few years back. We were talking about the methane hydrates in the seabed, you know, getting warm and releasing the methane gas from the seabed. But here we've got this permafrost, you know, the tundra there in northern Canada, right up close to Greenland, and an area roughly 52,000 square miles that is permafrost thawing out and decaying. And, of course, the bacteria and things in there are producing methane gas, which, you know, they estimate the amount of gas in this permafrost field they're talking about has about two times the amount of methane that's in the atmosphere right now stored in it. And if you look at that all coming into vapor, you're going to have three times the methane gas in the atmosphere that we have now, which certainly as an environmental thing is not pleasant. It doesn't mean that it's due to human activity. It's, as I've said to you many times, or to your listeners, the planets of the entire solar system are heating up. If the sun is the villain here, not, you know, cow gas or cars, you know, exhaust and stuff like that, it's really a change in the solar climate that is doing it to all of us, all of our planets. But it is a clear and present danger. I mean, when you look at that that area, it's like taking an area over 200 miles on the side, and that's got all the bound up you know, permafrost, at least that's what they found, that's starting to release the methane gas. You can see in the photo I've got there, you can click on the photo and just see from the airplane these pools of water and gas that are forming as a permafrost, you know, defrosts. And
it's okay.
Interesting. We're seeing changes here that there are so many variables in our whole environment at the moment that you got to wonder what's going to get us first, or are they all going to come together and surprise us?
Yeah.
It seems the internal threats scare me more than the natural disaster threats that we have, all the stuff that's been going on. But,
well, short-term,
you know,
yes, but long-term, you know, Joe, the change in the environment planet-wide is going to affect crop and food production, and people, when they get hungry, get aggro. So in the long-term, say in the next 10 years, this could be a real issue in fomenting war between nations on a large scale just for food resources.
All right. Food is a weapon, or food can certainly be, it has been used as a weapon, but the lack of food and then compounding that with using it as a weapon.
Well, water is becoming, you know, fresh water is becoming more scarce, and food both. I mean, they're two of the prime things that a human needs to survive, and through history, loss of water, loss of food have been major factors in wars, trying to get resources to survive. So, yes, it's a real consideration. Look at image, where are we here? Image 12. read about the new fault off California coast and that it could produce a possible 7.3 Richter earthquake. Now, this is from the Scripps Institute of Oceanography there in California. And the fault they're talking about is just off the coastline of San Diego. And they've been using one of their many sea vessels, research vessels, to drag a large array behind the boat. You can see it in the picture on their website when you go there. It's a hydrophone array. And with that, they image in great detail these fault lines and the structures off the coast there of California. With these, this new one that could rupture, they say it could produce a 7.4 Richter in the southern onshore portion if it releases, as well as the offshore segments of it, and it's broken into segments. Now, if that occurs there in San Diego, that's certainly down and away from the San Andreas up near California and over near the Salton Sea, but it could shake up enough, but that kind of a shake could trigger the San Andreas and its links going all the way up into Oregon on the coast and possibly into the Juan de Fuca plate, which would then release a Richter 9 plus, which would then cause tidal waves, which could then cause tsunamis, which would then perhaps see the development of the breakup of the West Coast and multiple volcanoes going off all the way down to Mexico City. That's kind of, you know, an extension of what I'm reading in this article.
Talk about Cal Exon, huh? Yeah. Wow.
Now, is this
you
the,
know, the Scripps is it? Sorry.
No, I just want to ask, is this fault line, I'm reading here, does this go all the way up the coast, or is this more towards Southern California?
Click on the picture of image 12, not the article down below. Click on the picture, and you can see that it's part of the Rose Canyon, Newport, Inglewood combined fault zone. And I think from looking at it, you're seeing it's in that little, from Newport yeah. Beach down to La Jolla. That area, I think, is what it affects. And it would also, you know, probably affect some of the inland fault lines. If you look at the fault line maps of California, there are so many faults there that they've mapped that you don't know which of them are going to interlock when it and release together when this one or others do trigger. But that is more in southern, you know, California there. So,
okay.
In fact, if you look at the image, you'll see in the upper left hand corner a blue line, which is not the the Rose Canyon fault zone, but you'll see a blue line going up and called the Palos Verdes fault.
Right.
The short blue line there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see if I can pull that up on the. I'll just grab another image here from the USGS and see what we can look at here. I'll zoom down into it.
If you're watching this on YouTube, of course, it was on our screen. If you're listening to this, it's off the coast. Yeah, wow.
Sad it is. I'm going down now then to look at, I missed it. Where is it? I want the U.S. California coastline. Yeah. All right. So we'll take a terrain map. I'm just going at San Diego. Yeah, it looks to me like that Rose, the Rose Creek thing, whatever that's called, that fault line, the Rose Canyon fault line, it's in a little kind of carved out crescent shape in the coastline, and San Diego is on the southern tip of it, and Los Angeles is inland up, you know, probably 20 miles or so up from the top edge of that arc. But when you look at the fault lines and things, the San Andreas fault could be triggered by this. I can see the focus of it going through between San Diego and Los Angeles and hitting the southern end of the San Andreas fault, which has all kinds of other parallel faults to it. In essence, it's just what they're saying is they found another possible trigger for one or more large, serious earthquakes along the West Coast, particularly down in California.
And so,
I'm just putting up, I'm just grabbing something here. In California, the other fault lines, I'm doing a zoom down here now then to see where that Rose Canyon might hit. Diego. Yeah, look, there are hundreds of little miniature faults that run basically parallel to the San Andreas. And, I'm looking at the Elsinore fault line, and that runs parallel to the crescent where we're talking about the Rose Canyon, but it's inland. And that kind of sort of ties into a fault down into Mexico, down into the Baja region. If you go on to USGS and look at their, you know, their earthquake maps that I normally get to put up on the weekly shows, you'll see that they have the option for you to click on showing plate boundaries, tectonic plate boundaries, U.S. faults, and U.S. hazard zones for earthquakes. And you can zoom right down in and see what I'm talking about here, and it will astound you. It will work.
All right.
You.
We'll check that out. Stan, we're coming up against our break. Folks, you're listening to Stan Deo on this edition of the Hagman Report. Go to standeo.com and bookmark that site. Check it daily, because each and every day, Stan and Holly update the website. And then there is the show images feature. When Stan comes on our show, you can follow along with the graphics and research that he has put together on the show images page each and every Tuesday night from 9 to 10 p.m. We'll be right back with Stan after these short messages. Stay with us.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you could possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. I mean, it is... It'll blow you away. Absolutely. Eric's a...
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
New Year from all of us at Trading Post in the Woods.
We pray you have a healthy, safe, and prosperous 2017.
And we would like to thank all of you for welcoming us to the Hagman and Hagman family. You're all a very wonderful and special group of people. Because we believe it is so important for you to work and acquire good health this year, we're going to do something that we've never done before as a thank you to you for your support. We're going to make something available that we believe everyone needs.
During the month of January, anyone who invests in their health by purchasing either our American Heritage Remedies Kit, our Survivalist Natural Remedies Kit, or $200 in individual remedies of your choice, we're going to give to you our crisis remedy, just in case, for free.
Your health must be a part of your preparation plan. We're here to help you with that dream. May God bless y'all, and may God bless America.
Happy New Year!
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman and Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome back. back, ladies and gentlemen, to our final segment on this edition of the Hagman Report. Stan Deo is our guest. Stan joins us each and every Tuesday, and we talk about a whole bunch of things, from what's going on in current events to news, politics, to the economy, to earth changes, from earthquakes to crazy weather and prophecy, scripture, and everything in between. Anywhere special you want to start this segment, Stan?
Yeah, I want to continue with the earth, with the earth changes that are occurring. There's an article that I've put up, a link to it at Image 10, entitled Volcanoes Could Erupt Much More Thanks to Climate Change. Now, that climate change, again, I stress, that is not based on cow gas or, more human consumption, that kind of stuff. That does have a minute effect on the overall picture of what's causing the planet to heat up. But when you go to this article on the BBC about that, let me just see if they're going to let us see that here. Yeah, there's a video. And you get on that video, and it's showing that the, like Iceland up in that area there, that the ice caps are melting over the top of the ground above these magma pockets that are along the fissure that divides Iceland in half. It's part of the North Atlantic fissure, or tectonic border, if you want to call it, but it's actually like an upwelling, a ridge that forms there as the continents separate. And because the ice on top there has been heavy enough, it's held the pressure like a lid on a bunch, not just one, but a bunch of these magma pockets, which is, right under the surface. And when the pressure is released enough on the top of these, the pressure that's in there will blow a hole up to the surface, and that's a volcano. So just by the ice melting and taking the weight off of these, they're saying, okay, we could see an increase in volcano eruptions there in Iceland. Now, that's in the cold countries. However, if you look at other places, the increase in likelihood of volcanoes can be due to evaporation of water. A case in point, in fact, I'll be doing a show with a radio crowd down in New Zealand here in the next couple of weeks about Lake Taupo on the North Island there. I've talked about it a number of times and been shown dream visions of it, and Holly and I've even visited it and walked on the shores with the steam coming up around our shoes. That area there, the Lake Taupo caldera, is as big as Yellowstone. And on the edge of this caldera, which is filled with water now, there are two or three other volcanoes like Ruapehu and Narahoi and things like that. And Ruapehu, erupts from time to time. But we visited with the equivalent of the USGS down there called the GNS, the Geological Nuclear Survey there. And when we visited them in 96, 97, that time there, they didn't have enough money at the GNS to put sensors that they need in the riverbeds and in the Lake Taupo to monitor the temperature at the bottom of the lake and vents that were forming and putting up, bubbling steam from the magma pool underneath it. Now, what's driving that is the twisting and sliding of the plates that come right down through North Island and off to the east side of South Island. And it's just absolutely, because of the number of factors involved underneath there in the seabed, it's sliding and twisting around both islands. And this is over a very thin part of the mantle of the Earth, where the magma pools are in great number there. And they know that at some point in time, New Zealand runs the risk of a massive volcanic eruption and attendant earthquakes that will happen around the same time. Now, the GNS, I went down there with Holly, and I did a radio show with Art Bell live, from the Lake Taupo. And I told the people that we'd found the steam. I had a dream vision that the entire caldera of Lake Taupo was going to collapse, and the water that's in the lake was going to fall down into the hot magma beneath and make this steam eruption that would just blow half of the island away. So I was doing that on a phone link to Art Bell in the States. Well, the next day, I was asked by the New Zealand Department of Tourism to never come back to New Zealand because it was hurting tourism, and talk about the potential of that. But that's, you know, that's when we have to watch the increase in heat in the planet and the redistribution of water that normally would fill that lake. So at least they've got the equipment down there now. Then since our visit, they were granted a huge budget by the government of New Zealand to buy the instrumentation, put it in place, hire staff to monitor it, and also to hire a German submarine to go down to the bottom of Lake Taupo and film, you know, record all the areas that were potential indicators of an eruption coming. So at least some people may be saved by an early warning from that. I would hope so. But it is coming. They know it, and I know it, and a lot of the other folks that have been given dream visions know it. Anyway, I digress. But that was on what was happening there, in addition to what's happening in Iceland. And with the California fault line I was just talking about before the break, the fault lines are just, you know, kind of west of where the magma pool is, where the Pacific plate dives down underneath the North American plate. And that's inland a bit, and you'll see up in Washington State and Oregon and Northern California, the Cascadia subduction zone, they call it. That's inland a bit. And that is in control of what could be volcanoes. And I have had a dream vision of that, which Holly put up in the dream vision section of our website there at the top of the page in those little gold rectangles. And you can read about that. And that showed me that there were somewhere between 6 and 8 volcanoes that were going to erupt simultaneously from up in Washington State all the way down to Popocatépetl in Mexico City at one time when the plate, the edge of the American continental plate starts to break apart. And so when is that going to happen? I don't know. But that's the lay of the land with that.
Wow. Well, okay, so no shortage of locations, I suppose, whether it be down under or on the coast, the west coast, everywhere.
Let's look at image 13 with earthquakes globally, you know, the weekly 7-day summary, and you can see that there's an interesting little pattern of about Richter 5s that's occurring over in the Mediterranean, right along the tectonic plate border, going from where Turkey joins to Syria through the Mediterranean over toward Sardinia, I think it is, up into Italy and across. No, it's not Sardinia. It's just in the middle of the ocean there, near the Aegean, I think. Anyway, and then there's another one over in Libya. And these have all happened in the last 7 days, indicating to me that portion of the seismic possibilities along the tectonic plate borders is becoming active now. So pressure is shifting over that way. And we're seeing here all the normal stuff at the Aleutians, you know, from Alaska around Japan, Indonesia, you know, Jakarta, those places, and New Zealand. We're seeing all those with Richter 6, you know, plus earthquakes in the last 7 days. A point I've made before on the show, but it was a while back, is that the large footprints that I've found in the ocean beds and on land in China and partially online in Chile and Peru are made by large asteroids, huge asteroids. I'm talking asteroids that hit the Earth so hard that one of them caused the Great Flood and broke up the continents from Pangaea into the nations we have, continents we have now. Well, I'm seeing the one up north of Australia in this image. It has a cluster of earthquakes around it, which it normally does, around the rim that was left by the Great Kutupa asteroid that caused the flood. And I look down at the tip of South America, the bottom tip of that's Argentina. And if you look to the right of it, you'll see a red outline that looks kind of like a hot dog or something. It's kind of an arc in the seabed. And at the right end of it, you'll see it's curved, and that's the rim formed by the El Tanin asteroid that impacted there. And you'll see two earthquakes that occurred in the last week just around the edge of that. But if you look at the history of that area, where the rim of that impact asteroid is where a lot of earthquakes have occurred over the time we've been keeping digital records of it. So these things, these great impacts, form thin, stressed areas of the mantle and the seabed. And that's why we have a number of earthquakes occurring over in the middle of South America there, where, you know, Peru, Chile are in that little indented asteroids. One hit the Philippines, one hit up off the coast of China, southern coast of it. And between the two of them, they formed this push out. And you can see in the little red fault line or tectonic border, they call it, you can see an arc, which is the end of the one that hit the Philippines and shoved the seabed over like that. So that, too, is not only the deepest place, the deepest crevice in the Earth's surface from that kind of activity, but it is part of an area that we can suspect large earthquakes to occur eventually, or larger. The United States still being very calm over there. I couldn't find any areas there that were impacts on land. Well, I take that back. I think there's one over to New England states going down into the Georgia region, but that's kind of iffy at the moment. It's hard to be sure that the footprint I see there is an asteroid impact when the Earth was a lot younger. Anyhow, I digress. But that's image 13, the global earthquake map for the last week. If you go to image 14, we're looking at the United States, the lower 48 states, and you can see there that the New Madrid has been a little bit busy this week. There's small earthquakes, but they're telling you there's microfractures, you know, little cracks going on in the New Madrid fault line. Normal stuff happening over in Oklahoma, you know, in northern Oklahoma, where you have the fracking and disposal of salt water and stuff. One earthquake up in the Juan de Fuca Plate up at near the border between Canada and the United States. And the normal outline of stresses on the west side of the United States, you'll see these little tiny earthquakes and some larger ones outline an area from Las Vegas right on up through to the border to Canada, just south of Calgary. And then along the coast, you can see it and around the breadbasket here in the, the breadbasket, California. What's that that valley called? You know it.
What's yeah,
it
the valley.
Yeah, I'm glad.
The valley.
The valley. Oh, gosh, my mind's gone blank. Old age, I guess, but anyway.
San Joaquin Valley.
San Joaquin, yes. Sorry, San Joaquin.
San Joaquin. All right.
And the earthquakes occurring around that do probably lend credence to the various Sears reports, you know, of how California will break up into islands rather than the whole thing fall off. There will be islands as it fractures, and in our lifetime anyway, that's, well, if we're still here, that's something we would probably see and deal with. There's image 11. Yeah, I've got two links underneath it to watch the bulletproof study on the date of the rapture, which is occurring in late September this year, or the guy's website that put the video up, and his link to the work of the guy at Dallas Theological Studies, Theological Seminary, Dr. Michael Spiegel, I think, S-V-I-G-E-L, Spiegel, who is an associate professor of theological studies. They've worked out, and he's this guy that has a website, studied it, and they've worked out that there will be a 30-day period before the beginning of the tribulation, which we can see that the alignment of the moon, you know, in the Virgo constellation, which I'll show you that in a minute on my website there, that alignment marks the beginning of, you know, Revelation 12 in the skies. It only occurs once, you know, in the last 20 or 2,000 years, something like that. And so we are pretty sure that this is marking the beginning of the tribulation period. This guy is, of course, absolutely positive, and so I put that caveat, probably, maybe. He's not picking the exact day or the exact hour, but he's telling you when a 48-hour window occurs that will probably be the rapture before the September 23rd alignment of Virgo. Now, go to that thing, listen to his video, and read the articles yourself and see what you think. I'm not trying to, you know, cause anybody to have an argument, but I found this study fit in so well with what I've got in image 2 and image 3. And if you look at my image 2, you can click on the image and see the enlargement that I made, but you can also go to the website of the guy. His website's called watchfortheday.org, and you can just link to it from that image 2. The great sign of Revelation 12. description, there are 12 stars that are over the head of the Virgo formation, lining up on the 23rd of September this year. That's a quite rare thing. There's no being misled by that. That does happen. So look at that and add that to your study if you're of mind. I think it's telling us that we may see a bit of hardship and chaos between now and then here in the States and elsewhere in the world for sure, as far as, you know, civil war or, you know, terrorist attacks and all kinds of things. But if we can make it down to September, the end of September, I think we will see that the rapture may well occur in that time period. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm just looking at the planetary alignment. Yeah, the planetary alignment is very interesting. As the moon, the sun.
Well, and folks, let me say that Rosh Hashanah begins on the 20th of September this year, and the first day of Tishri of Rosh Hashanah is the 21st. And the 23rd falls on the Sabbath, the third day of Tishri. And that's when that alignment is perfect. Just a thought.
Okay, so this, just looking at this this planetary alignment, that's never happened before, right? Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, and it, because it aligns so well with the description in Revelation 12, Revelation 12:1, and there appeared a great wonder where? In heaven, and that's where this constellation is, a woman clothed with the sun, and certainly if you look at that image, the sun is on her shoulders, clothing her in this alignment. And as I say, I've run through this thing really almost hour at a time, looking at where that alignment of the sun over the shoulder would be. But the rest of it says, and the moon under her feet at the same time, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. Now, I didn't, you know, discover this lineup with Revelation 12, but I did investigate after it was pointed out to me. And I tell you what, the 12 stars are looking for. You've got the formation of Leo, which looks like stars to an observer from the ground looking at this formation. And then you've got Mercury, Mars, and Venus, you know, lining up there at the same time. And that gives you your 12 stars. And the moon is at her feet. And you wouldn't believe, well, you would if you go to these programs, you would see how rapidly the position of the stars, the sun, the moon, all this change as the clock ticks. So finding these kind of alignments with the computer software we've got, you go back 2,000 years or so before it happened before. And there'll be another one that's not as good an alignment within 2 years of this, and then there'll be a long spate after that, you know, barring any, you know, catastrophic events in the solar system. But I put a little link or explanation of the image of the that you're looking at, astronomical image there in image two, where it has, you see that HIP 66249 pointing at Virgo, the star there. If you remember that and go to slide three next to it, you'll see that the meaning of that name of that, which is Zeta Virginis or Heza in Hebrew, is you put all the letters together, and it says, like, it's behold the returning light straight from God to man, and that's what's the name of that star there in right in the middle of Virgo, the Zeta Virginis. So this has been, you know, hidden in the stars. You know, they were set there for times and seasons, you know, and tell us what, you know, what the time and season is, because they didn't move very much from the time of Jesus to now as far as major factors, but minor alignments did, and that's how God gave to the prophets the ability to see when it was time for various events. And in this case, I think we're looking at the rapture.
Very interesting. And people watching this or people listening to this can go to YouTube, Stan's show images page, but it's on display on YouTube if you're watching this live, of course, or via archive. You can go to the standeo.com, his page of images, show images, or on our YouTube channel. Very interesting. Yeah. But you said 2 years, a similar configuration in 2 years from now, or, I mean, not exactly?
It'll be a minor form of that. It won't be as tight. And I'm not sure that we have all 12 stars where they need to be. I think in that one, as I recall, it was the sun was in a lower position down her body rather than being up on her shoulder. It depends on that, you know, whether that is where it means close with the sun. Do you have meaning close with the sun, be the sun on her shoulder or down at her waist? And that was the difference there, major difference. But anyway, those two things tell us we're in the region, in the neighborhood. And it's meant to be good news because we know the tribulation starts in Revelation 12 there. And when Satan and his minions are cast out of heaven down to earth, and all sorts of bad stuff is going to start happening at the tribulation period. So at least we are getting very close to things lining up on the Hebrew calendar. You know, special events like, Rosh Hashanah, the new year, that's the civil new year, and then this sign in the heavens. I'm terribly excited about it, and I just wanted to share that with folks so that, they don't just have a gloomy evening.
Well, yeah, and,
Stan, we got about 4 or 5 minutes left. I don't know how much of this you got to go through. Did you get a chance to read through any of the WikiLeaks CIA findings?
No, I didn't. What are you talking about in particular?
Well, the there's Vault a file 7. Called Vault 7 that WikiLeaks released today, and there's people are still going over this, over 8,000 documents. But some of what has come out today from those documents, one, the CIA can turn on smart TVs, phones into gadgets with open mics. You know, some of this has been talked about.
That's, but
this is the proof.
About.
Yeah, the NSA has no checks and balances. Weaponizing all the electronics and anything that's connected to the internet. Their cyber attacking abilities. Also, that the Russian hackers apparently that. The media has been so quick to talk about and try to lump in with Trump turned out to be apparently American spies, where they used, you know, their technology to make it look or to leave footprints to implicate somebody else. And I mean, there's just so much.
We talked about the show a few weeks back. Remember when we're looking at all those lines about where you can go to that site that lets you see who's real time hacking what country and where it came from.
Yeah.
And how they would go over to the Middle East and use, was it the UAE's computer systems network there to, to hide where the actual attack came from to any particular country? They'd, use those servers as proxies. And so, yeah, I believe that. And no question about that.
It's officially called misdirected attribution. And that's, misdirected attribution. So it would be using one computer to, or it would, setting someone up, framing them. I guess.
And hey, on a lighter note, can you hear this crunching in the background here? Just, I'll be quiet. Listen. Oh, she stopped now.
Doesn't say no.
It's my dog having a chew on a favorite bone. She's really getting into it. Anyway.
You know, you gotta love
that. She's not bothered by this, all this stuff.
No. Our lady of the studio dog is laying right in the middle of the studio. She's actually sprawled out. You gotta love the dogs, right? You gotta love the
They do form a bit of humor and comic relief to the day. We see things in them every day that tickle us.
Yeah, absolutely.
In fact, Bella, one that's chewing the bone here, she's a black colored dog. She's a Kelpie, but we let him out in the back to run out there in an acre and a half or so, and because it's dry grass and broken off and stuff, she found a place out in the backyard to really just roll on her back, on her side, on her nose, on her head, in between her toes. And when she came up wanting to come in the house this morning, we saw nothing but grass bits with two eyes sticking out. And I tell you what, it took Holly and I 2 vacuum cleaners and a broom and a brush to get her where she could come in again. And he had to stop laughing. But anyway, what a disguise. She could have been a sniper dog.
Yeah, in a ghillie suit. That's right. Wow.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Made her own ghillie suit. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, Sandy, I was going to say we got about a minute left. You did it again, man. You took us to the end of the program. But go ahead. Just a couple of quick notes.
There are articles on our news page Holly's put up. Look for the third of all U.S. shopping malls are projected to close as space available signs go up all over America. This does not bode well when a third of these shopping centers and other businesses, you know, that are closing down or shutting down stores like Sears, JCPenney's, Macy's. This is preparing you for what is coming, the financial collapse. And there's going to be a crisis that will require some really interesting ways to exchange money, you know, to get rid of cash and go to digital. Just another little warning to watch, guys.
Yeah, I was speaking with my wife today. Our large mall that we have here, Sears, is closed. I said, when did that happen? Oh, a couple weeks ago, apparently. So.
Yeah, well, Walmart's been doing the same thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
Something to watch. Well, God bless you, my friend. Thank you so much, and my best to our best to Holly and the kids.
Yeah. She hasn't slowed up. I don't know how she doesn't chip her teeth off, but I'll tell her. The dog, not Holly. Oh, that was a wicked look.
Yeah. Right, thanks for that clarification. Week. All right, man.
Thanks,
God
man.
Bless, man.
Bye-bye. God bless.
All right. Well, folks, that'll do it for us. Wow, you know, it's an amazing thing. But you gotta love the dogs, seriously. And anyone with a dog out there listening to this, give your pal an extra hug, an extra pat. Seriously, a little scratch behind the ear.
Tomorrow we have a great show lined up for you. In hour one, Lisa Haven will be our guest.
Yeah.
Rashard Gibson will be joining us in hour two. And Pastor David Langford has tomorrow night, he's off tomorrow night from our show. He's got some prior engagements that he's got going on. But Jason Peters will be filling in for him. So we got a great show lined up for you tomorrow, and it was a great show tonight. T.L. Davis, William Ramsey, and then Stan Deo. But be sure to tune in tomorrow. We're going to continue to
spread the word about our show, please.
Yeah, and subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't done that already.
Yes.
Until tomorrow, stay safe, God bless, have a great evening.